This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
And good morning, everybody. Still fighting whatever I'm fighting here, but fighting with you to take your phone calls at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Only here for an hour because of Mariner baseball coming up. So let's get started with some headlines. Well, no Mariner game yesterday, so today it's going to be Mike Leake going out there in the cold weather in Minnesota trying to see if they can get this two-game losing streak back and back to the winning side. 3-3, their record is right now, and they're on a two-more-game road trip in very cold Minnesota. Temperature's probably going to be in the 30s again, so that's not going to be good, but we'll see if they can get the hitting going, because they didn't get the hitting, particularly with runs with hitters in position to try to score. They didn't do that. In the Masters, well, it's not getting off to a good start for Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson. You know, Woods right now 1 over for the day, 5 over for the tournament. Looks like he's not going to be a factor. He's right now tied for 48th. And then Phil Mickelson, 2 over. He's 7 over for the tournament, really almost at the very back of the end. Only 53 players made the cut, and he's right now 52. So that's not good as far as the leaderboard, which, of course, they're not going to start here for another couple hours. You know, Reed is at 9 under. Leishman is at 7 under. Stenson at 5 under. McIlroy and Spieth at 4 under. Still looks like a very good tournament. For now, the guy who broke his ankle and was able to come back and have the second-best score on Thursday, you know, he's still 3 under in contention. So that's kind of one of the better stories right now in the Masters. So we'll keep you up to date on that. As far as National Football Leagues, lots of signings yesterday, even a trade. You know, Kevin Hogan going over to the Washington Redskins from Cleveland for a sixth-round pick. So they basically have traded all three of their quarterbacks that they drafted a couple years ago, traded all three to get a sixth-round pick from Washington. Jordan Matthews ends up signing with the New England Patriots. He replaces Brandon Cooks, who ended up being traded over to the Los Angeles Rams for a first-round pick and another swap of a couple other picks. So that deal is done. A lot more signings than expected. We're about at 153 unrestricted free agents that have signed. I know JB and Renton's going to be interested in this one, but the Saints, you know, they ended up signing Cameron Meredith to a 2-year, $9.6 million restricted contract. And, of course, he was their best receiver last year. He is coming off an ACL, so we'll see where he stands health-wise. But 7 days to match right now for the Chicago Bears. You have to think at 4.8, why would they quibble on that? That's not bad for the best receiver they had on their team last year. And those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to JB in Renton. Hey, JB.
Hey, Mr. Clayton, how are we doing on this rainy Saturday morning, sir?
Yeah, rainy, and I feel sick, so not a good start to the Saturday.
I hope you get better, sir. I hope you get better.
I hope so, too.
We were talking about Cameron Meriwether last week, about that guy. You know, I watched him with the Bears. He was their best receiver until that ACL in the offseason there. I think that was in preseason last year. Now, I know it normally takes about a year for a guy to come back from a year. You know, the year after is when you see the production from this guy. Do you see the Bears matching that?
I do, because I think, let's put it this way. If he's a number two receiver, which now with Allen Robinson on the team, you know, you have to kind of wash away Kevin White, their first-round pick, who's been injured his first 2 years. You know, if he's number two, 4.8 is not a bad contract, and they've got plenty of cap room and not a lot of talent. And if he was their best receiver, it would be curious to see if they let him go, because if they do, then that kind of shows you maybe there's some questions about Cameron Meredith. But I have to think they're going to keep him. You know, I can't imagine him being allowed to go to the Saints.
I know, but that would be a dream come true, Mr. Clayton, because what that would allow the Saints to do is to go to the draft. I think one of the three key positions of need that they had, it was tight end, wide receiver, and a pass rusher. You know,
at least
take one off the board. Yeah, that would at least take one off the board. Now, as far as pass rusher is concerned, Mr. Clayton, coming into the draft, it's not very strong on the pass rushers. Once you pass the kid out of North Carolina State, it has a drop off. Now, I'm looking at the guy from LSU, Arden Key. What are you hearing about him?
He's got a lot of problems off the field, but I have to think he's a good consideration because arguably he's the third best pass rusher. You know, Brandon Chubbs is also probably number one, and then Davenport's number two, and then arguably Key's number three. But his off the field problems probably puts him in the second round.
You don't think he could sneak into that early first round? Because you know the
I could see it.
Yeah,
I'd be curious to see what Seattle thinks of him because, you know, Seattle, is willing to take a chance on some people that have had some problems off the field. And, they've been right most of the time. And so I think that he would have to be a consideration, particularly, let's say Seattle trades down two or three times. I could see that being a consideration for Seattle, and I can see it being a consideration for the New Orleans Saints.
Yeah, because, the thing it is you know, Seattle picked up a very interesting guy. They picked up Bartavius Mango. They picked him up. I think they're going to probably use him as that jack linebacker or something like that. Arden Key is a guy that I think, you know, even though you look at him, he's kind of slender frame, but his better production is with his hand on the ground. And using his athleticism and speed. I know he had some kind of little off-the-field situation. He says he's got it rectified. And, you know, also, I can understand why you say Seattle. Ed Orgeron is a real good friend of Pete Carroll.
Right, agreed.
He could definitely get some insight on the guy and let him know what really went down and what happened as far as that's concerned. Well, could you see the Saints picking up a tight end in that first round also?
I think it's going to be very difficult. I mean, because it's not a good tight end draft. I mean, we've now had, I think, back-to-back good tight end drafts after a couple of years where bad tight end drafts. And so I think right now, I mean, what, there's only one real first-round tight end, and that tight end I don't think is going to last all the way down to New Orleans' pick. And so, it's funny because, you know, they made the move on Kobe Fleener, and that turned into a bath. I mean, it just was no good. It just didn't work.
No. Kobe Fleener is one of those guys, Mr. Clayton. I think if he was next to a superior tight end, you could see production. But when you try to make him the man on your team, it doesn't work. He's not that type of guy. You know, if you can line him up in going against a nickel package on defense, and he's taking the lesser of the better linebackers or corners, then you can see production. He's not the guy that's the focal point. And that did not work out well. Do you see them letting him go if they were to get a tight end in the draft?
Yeah, in the first couple of rounds, I could see that happening. Just to clear up cap room, I definitely see that being one because, you could tell in the very first year, they just didn't really think that they got the bang for the buck out of him. And that's, I think you made a good point because I still remember when he was drafted by Indianapolis in 2012. That year, they took Dwayne Allen and Kobe Fleener. And I was watching it on the field. And remember, Fleener went to Stanford. So he went to Andrew Luck's college and was going to be an Andrew Luck favorite. But still, he didn't go over the top with his play. And I thought Dwayne Allen was a little bit better, you know, at least more of a complete tight end. You know, Fleener obviously is not a blocker. I mean, he's a guy that's going to be more in the pass game, but he's been inconsistent in the pass game. So you put that together and you say, all right, he gets the big $8 million contract from the Saints, hasn't lived up to any of that. And so, it's one where you kind of wonder. It's like you figure he's a short-termer, and particularly now that tight end is one of the big priorities in the team, there's no doubt he's a short-termer.
You're gonna have to make some adjustments on that as far as that's concerned on that. You were talking about some of the other teams that did some moves this week coming up. Let's talk about Carolina. Davis got caught for PED.
Yeah, Thomas Davis. It was like when I was talking to Dave Wyman about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Dave thinks, why is it that the players aren't getting it as far as you can't cheat? Well, one of the problems is Thomas Davis probably was not cheating. He's been taking the same supplement or whatever it was for the last 7 to 8 years. But one of the things that you don't know when you take any kind of a supplement or any kind of a thing that's going to try to help you, they're not FDA tested. And so in some batch, if something in there is going to be illegal from the Players Association and the NFL, then you get docked. I mean, I go back to Lane Johnson, the right tackle from the Philadelphia Eagles. You know, Lane called the 800 line for something that he wanted to take. And they said, okay, yeah, that's okay. So he took it, but he got a tainted package of whatever he was taking, and so he had to get suspended for 4 games. And that's how unfortunate it is, but, you know, you take these things, I mean, you think they're approved, but technically they're not because there's no double check.
Do they take consideration for that when you go up for your
no.
appeal? Are they,
no.
They don't.
They do not.
Oh, okay.
No, because, and I think that's fair, because if it's in the system and it's illegal, you're going to pay the price.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely will. Now, we're talking about another receiver like Jordan Matthews got picked up by New
right.
England. You know, possession receiver. You know, I'm sure Julian Edelman is going to come back. He's going to be highly needed right now since Amendola went to Miami. How do you see
right.
that working out with the Patriots?
I think it's going to be okay because, you know, he's a good receiver from the 2014 draft. He is a vertical guy, you know, because, again, you know, you got the horizontal guys and the vertical guys and all that stuff. I mean, but, you know, Brandon Cook was a nice fit for a year, and they were able to rent him and then get a better first-round pick once they traded him to the Rams. But I think that, you know, he'll help because, again, what Tom Brady likes, he likes guys that can kind of cross the middle, be more slot guys. I mean, you notice Edelman and Amendola, and most of those guys were all slot guys. And so he gets the most out of slot guys. And, you know, Jordan Matthews is a slot guy. I think he'll fit in. They probably got him at a good price. I know he was asking in the last week for $5 million. You probably figure he probably gets about $2.5 to $3 million, maybe $3.5 million, but they get him at a bargain price, and they don't have to pay Brandon Cooks.
Yeah, Cooks
is going to get 14 plus a year. What do you think of that trade?
Wow. Yeah, that's what I was getting ready to ask you. I mean, I thought Brandon Cooks fit in just fine with Tom Brady throwing the long ball and all that. Now the Rams
right.
getting him. Now, are the Rams, it looks good on paper, what they've done with Ndamukong Suh, with Brandon Cooks and all those other boys they brought in. How do you see that equating to them getting over the top with Brandon Cooks with Tavon Austin there?
Well, what I think it does is it maintains that 28 to 30 point offense because now they have the deep threat. And one of the things, there's two things that you can see Sean McVay liking. He likes decoys. And so his two decoys last year were Sammy Watkins deep, you know, trying to draw coverage, and then having Tavon Austin, you know, do, fake moves and, you know, jet sweeps and things like that. And he likes that. And so now he's going to be able to continue to do that and not have to pay $16 million a year for Sammy Watkins, who I think was overpaid.
Yeah, I agree with you on that point that Sammy Watkins. I thought he never lived up to the billet that he came out of college with from Clemson. He never
right.
lived up to that style.
Oh, now, hey, JB, got a run. Yep, JB, got a run.
Mr. Clayton, we'll talk.
All right, sounds good.
Take it easy, sir.
All right, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Raider Jim. Hey, Jim, how are you?
I'm doing fine, John. I understand you're under the weather, and you're such a true professional. You're battling through it, and I appreciate it, John.
I'm battling through.
Yeah. You know, you're a multimedia guy. We love what you write, but, you know, you're also, on the radio quite a bit, and so when you depend on having your voice, it can be kind of tough.
I'm just glad I have some kind of a voice today.
Yeah, right. John, let's talk about the Alliance of American Football. I understand
yeah.
that you've got a podcast on Schooled, and I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, and I look forward to that. But for purposes of my education and your audience, why don't you tell us a little bit about that? I know it's been funded by a number of people and founded by Charlie Ebersole and Bill Polian's involved, now Steve Spurrier,
yep.
Troy Polamalu on the player side, along with Justin Tuck. Looks like it's a good situation, and they're going to do it before the other organization, I forget what they're called, but they're going to do it a year beforehand. It looks like a good situation.
It really does. And they've always had good funding. And then the big thing is that Ebersole was able to secure some TV because they got CBS to pick things up. It's going to be eight
oh, wow.
teams based in the Southeast. For purposes that travel and all that stuff, I mean Spurrier, was the first of the coaches that they were able to hire. And now it's a matter that they've got others. My understanding is, and I didn't get this from Bill, they're willing to pay about $750,000 for coaches. And so that means you're going to get coaches. And we interviewed Bill Polian. He said they're going to get good coaches. And now they're going to start leaking out the names of the coaches as they go, kind of one by one. And I think you can see there's an excitement. You can see because of Bill Polian, there may be an eventual connection with the National Football League. And, you know, it's not like this is something that has just started overnight. I mean, Bill's been working on this for about a year. And Ebersol has been working on it longer than that. And so now they've got funding. You know, they've got television. They're getting the cities. And now it's a matter of just getting the players. And if you get the coaches, you're going to get the players. And the idea is to be an eventual developmental league that takes all the players that kind of get cut, that don't get a chance to get back immediately, and give them a chance to develop a little bit. And that's been the problem since the World League ended, because the World League did such a good job of taking a quarterback, giving him playing time. And you look back in the late 90s, I mean, that helped Kurt Warner. It helped Rob Johnson. It helped Jake Delhomme, John Kitna. I mean, you go through the list of quarterbacks, and there was a bunch that came back and were able to start in the National Football League. Well, right now, you don't see that. I mean, once a quarterback goes through 4 years, I mean, he's pretty well out of sight, out of mind, if he can't get a chance to play or doesn't get a chance to continue to get the starts. And so you have, like, each team has, each year, about 9 teams that start quarterbacks as backups that have never played a down. And that's just not right. So now you get a chance to you get these guys to have a little bit of experience, a little bit of coaching, and they're going to have pretty basic rules, and they're going to experiment with different rules. I really like it. I think this one was well thought out, and I think this one can be the developmental leg for the National Football League.
Sure, and it's, John, it's commensurate with what you've talked about in the past as well. I mean, with all these spread offenses in college, some of the kids don't get exposed like they need to, with pro-style, formations and schemes. And this would help that tremendously, I think. And not only on the quarterback side, but on the offensive line side. And, if you get some behemoth from a Division II or Division III team that's got a lot of talent, got some good feet work, but he's not necessarily pro-caliber just yet in the NFL, he might be pro-caliber for a developmental league such as what we're just talking about here. I think it makes perfectly good sense, and it's been a void for a long time, and I'm happy to see it.
I am too. I mean, it is long overdue, because this game is hurting without a developmental league. Because, I mean, you think about what ends up happening. I mean, you get a starter, it gets hurt. Who's going to replace him? Nobody has the depth on their roster to fully be able to replace everybody. And then you look in the streets, and you're not going to get anybody that's got too much experience. It's just not going to be there. Or if they do have experience, they're so old, they're not going to be as productive. So, no, I think this is a very good thing.
Right. John, no progress yet on the Khalil Mack contract. Any news on your end, and what do you expect to see as far as compensation on that contract?
I think about $19.5 to $20 million. I think that's inevitable, and so I think it's a matter who signs first. Is it going to be Aaron Donald? Is it going to be Khalil Mack? Probably it's going to, because that's going to be a very difficult contract to do. But again, it's one that they have no choice. I mean, he's too good. He's too valuable. They've got to get something done with him.
Right, indeed, and I'm a bit surprised that it's gone on this long. But then again, the Raiders are fairly methodical when it comes to contracts.
Yeah, speaking of contracts, what do you think of voiding the contract of Marquise King and then him coming back in a vengeful act and signing with the Denver Broncos for 3 years?
Well, John, it's interesting you mentioned that. We talked about Marquise King last week. It was a bit of a surprise, and my son was sitting there going, you want to ask John any questions? He goes, no, why'd they cut Marquise King?
Personality. They didn't. John Gruden never hardly met him, but doesn't like his personality.
Right, and they were mentioned, he was saying, look, did it have anything to do with your antics on the field? And frankly, they let him do what he wanted to do, and that's kind of the Raider way. You can do whatever you want to, and then some. They've always had extracurricular activity on the Raiders, so this is more whimsical than that, But I was a bit surprised he went over to the Broncos, but if you think about it, he's got a great foot, and, in that stadium, with the altitude, he's going to be a star over there.
No doubt. He was a star in Oakland.
Well, he, indeed he was, and he's, you know, he's big on social media, and he was a darling of the social media folks. And yeah, I'm still a bit surprised at it, but then again, it makes perfectly good sense for the Broncos. And you know, one of my buddies, John Elway's doing well with that. I mean, he's a smart guy, no question about it. No question about it.
And there's no doubt in those two games against Oakland, he's going to be jacked up, no question.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm sure you're looking forward to going out to London this coming year, John, and seeing the Seahawks play the Raiders out there. And I'll be looking forward to hearing your sideline comments, John.
That's going to be a lot of fun.
Indeed, indeed.
Hey, Jim, thanks for the phone call.
Okay, take care.
Okay. All right, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Patrick in Kent. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, good morning, John. How's it going?
Good morning. I wish I felt better.
Oh, yeah. Just want to talk about the Mariners so far.
Yeah.
It's just that the pitching is just kind of in spurts where they just give up in certain innings, and that's they need to improve. That's where they need to improve.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, it's starting to see that, you know, now once you, you know, that, and I know this thought had been there before, and you hope it was going to be better, you know, with James Paxton and Felix Hernandez. Now, I mean, each has had one really good start, but once you get into that third turn around the lineup, then you start to see things getting a little bit shaky, and that's where a lot of teams now are starting to use the relievers more and all that, and probably in the case of you know, Paxton, you know, getting that extra sixth inning on Thursday probably did cost him. But, boy, for five innings, he was pretty effective. I mean, he was able to battle an eagle, get that done. He was able to, you know, get a shutout ball for five innings. All that looked good. But then, you know, the two runs he gave up in the sixth, you know, that ended up hurting but didn't cost him the game. Bullpen came in, giving up, you know, a run each. But, you know, he at least Paxton pitched like Paxton.
Yeah, I wonder if this is going to be the norm now for Felix, pitching like five or six innings.
Probably. And again, you know, particularly at the beginning of the season, I mean, he had such limited time in spring training. He had only two outings because he had the line drive that ended up wiping everything out. Then he had the good Saturday performance before the opener. And then he had the great opener. I thought he did fantastic. But, yeah, I just think it's going to be, you know, difficult for him to get too far into the sixth and seventh. It's like it'd be nice if he can do it, but I don't know if he's going to be able to consistently do it.
Okay. Thanks a lot, John.
All right, Patrick. Hey, thank you very much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's check up with the Seahawks and Greg Bell from the News Tribune coming up next. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
And joining us right now to talk some football is Greg Bell from the News Tribune. And, Greg, I don't know, it's you know, been a very unusual way to follow free agency because, you know, they ended up signing a little bit more in unrestricted free agents than I thought they would. And now there's still two key openings that are there, a cornerback and backup quarterback. You would think they were getting those things done, but right now, still not resolved.
Hi, John. No, you would think that they have Byron Maxwell, their starting cornerback at the end of last season after Richard Sherman got hurt. You would think they have him kind of in their back pocket, knowing what it would take to sign him and knowing they can get him. Maxwell remains a free agent. Now, he'd be a short-term fix into his 30s, of course, but it is curious they haven't done it already because you think if he would be signing with any team, it would be the one he grew up with and just got re-signed and started for last year. You're right, that remains an issue, what they're going to do there. I mean, they have Nico Thorpe, DeAndre, Elliott. There's people who have played the position, not in starring featured roles yet, but they've got to answer for that. And I do think eventually Byron Maxwell will sign. Now, the backup quarterback situation, a couple options came open. The Los Angeles Chargers choosing to re-sign Kellen Clemens leaves him on the market. And, yeah, I know he's about 90 years old, but 7 of his 10 years he's been with Brian Schottenheimer, the new offensive coordinator, of course, for the Seahawks. And you would think they might get a guy like that to help teach Russell Wilson the intricacies of not only the play calling by Schottenheimer, but just how Schottenheimer coaches. He's known to be a very detailed guy. I talked to Kellen Clemens when Schottenheimer took the Seattle job, and he said he's a strict disciplinarian on the details, on the footwork, on he even gets on receivers. He's really a hard guy. And that'll be a lot different than Daryl Bevel has been for Russell Wilson,
So it makes sense to bring a guy like Kellen Clemens. Maybe it makes sense to bring a guy like Mark Sanchez, who's played both for Schottenheimer when he was the Jets play caller and, of course, Pete Carroll at USC. It'll be that kind of an option, I think, as a veteran. And then I also wouldn't rule out either drafting very late, especially if they recoup more picks and trades, drafting a quarterback very late in draft or signing one as an undrafted free agent like they did Trevon Boykin.
Yeah, I honestly thought the cornerback and backup quarterback position would be taken care of here this past week, but now we're kind of gone a little bit, I guess, into my overtime.
Yeah, it speaks to, one, the Seahawks still don't have a ton of money, as you know, it's cap space, but two, they're looking for something short-term, one-year deals, and those are, of course, most of what the signings, any free agent signings that are going to happen now are going to be those type of deals. On one hand, you say, well, this isn't really a big deal because Russell Wilson hasn't missed a game, which is true. But I think, John, it really spooked them in 2016 when Wilson finally did get hurt in a couple games and missed some key series, that Trevon Boykin had to come in with the game still in doubt, an undrafted, untested rookie. And they all said, well, we don't know if we need to do that anymore. We need a veteran who's played in the game. And that's why Austin Davis was here last year. Now, Davis, by the way, still remains unsigned. He's visited Jacksonville and a couple other places, as has Kellen Clemens. But I think they're going to get a veteran of some kind who has started games before in the NFL. And no, I don't think it's going to be Colin Kaepernick. I think if they would have done that, yeah, they would have done it last year at this time.
How do you look back at the Colin Kaepernick visit and decision not to sign him?
Honestly, John, I think it was a little bit of a charade. I think the appearance of them being progressive in a player's first environment and Pete Carroll wanting to show that he likes outspoken activism, players to be their individual selves, all of that was lended itself to being the only team still that has given Colin Kaepernick a free agent visit in the last two off seasons. But it was obvious the public explanation Pete Carroll gave was pretty hollow, to say that, well, he's a starting quarterback and we already have one. Well, he was before they ever asked him to come in to visit. So I think it was a lot more to it than that. I think that it was maybe too much competition for Russell Wilson, if you will, way too much distraction, way too much money, frankly, for a former Super Bowl quarterback who's played in the league as long as he has. That's money and time, maybe a couple years of a contract that they didn't want to commit to Colin Kaepernick. I think it looked good to have him come in, but either they never really intended to sign him, or they just, it became too expensive and too problematic and too much of a distraction behind Russell Wilson to do it.
Now that we've had both Pete Carroll and John Snyder talk about the free agent signings, little, I guess I'm not surprised, but I think, you know, they really seem to have a big role ahead for Barkevious Mingo.
They do. They've talked about him being a Sam linebacker, the strong side linebacker, the Bruce Irvin type role who then goes down into an edge rusher on passing situations. And that's something they need to have. They haven't had that in the last couple of years since Irvin left, someone effective in that role. Mingo, of course, a first-round draft pick for his pass rushing skills out of LSU a few years ago, but has never even come close to the production that anyone in the NFL thought he would get when he was in the top half of the draft. It'll be interesting to see what they do with, and whether it's a every-down role or whether he just fits into a pass rush-only situation. They're still so thin on the defensive line that it wouldn't surprise me that Mingo becomes more of an every-down type of player, and they need him. And they have Deion Jordan, and they're guys that they're counting on that the league has been waiting years and years since they were first-round draft pick. What is the four of the top 13 or so picks from 2013 are now on the Seahawks roster, none of whom have fulfilled their potential yet, and the Seahawks need him to. And that's what happens when you trade away Michael Penning. You probably lose with Cliff Averill in the same offseason. They're suddenly very thin. And then Sheldon Richardson signing with Minnesota, they're suddenly very thin on the defensive line.
Yeah, even though he did some good things on a limited basis, do you see enough there from Deion Jordan to see significant playing time?
He hasn't proven he can do it week in and week out. What is it now, John? Five games in 3 years he's played.
Right.
He came back last year to play those five games and then got hurt again. He had to have a knee surgery as soon as he signed with the Seahawks this time last offseason, with leftover injuries from the Miami days. and he didn't even get on the field until November. So he has a world of potential, they think, and they really do think they're going to untap that potential. They love his speed. They love his size, tall, rangy guy. But they don't know if he can do it week in and week out because he hasn't done it in 3+ years. And they, again, they need him to, as the roster is currently constructed. They're counting on Mingo and Deion Jordan to be their pass rush, edge rush type sack guys, along with Frank Clark on the other side. It's a lot to ask. Sure, it looks like he has the potential to do it, but for a guy who has not played regularly in more than 3 years, those are long odds. Well, very long odds.
No, I agree. That's why they need somebody. Now, where do you think they stand in the draft on a pass rusher? They have the 18th pick. I think they can get a pass rusher there. The more you trade down, the less chance you can to get a good pass rusher.
Right, and I think if they keep that pick, John, it may end up being a Marcus Davenport, a pass rusher at the bottom of the first round, Davenport raw out of the University of Texas, San Antonio. Tons of athletic skill, another rangy, speedy outside edge rusher guy that they probably could get at 18 or maybe even down at 20 if they traded down a couple spots. I think the most likely scenario remains the Seahawks trading down, but unlike last year, because their needs are so more acute, not out of the first round. Maybe trading down a few places, maybe even as much as 10 spaces, to perhaps recoup a second or maybe more likely a third round pick that they traded away for Dwayne Brown during last season. And if they do go down to the bottom 20 for the first round, they could still get a pass rusher. The draft's pretty deep in athletic edge rushers. They could also get a running back. It's so obvious that they need more running backs. It's not so obvious that they're going to use their first pick on one. And this draft is also deep in that. When everyone says, well, the draft's deep in this, draft's deep in that, for the Seahawks, they only have right now, as you know, one pick in the first round and then another, the next one's not until the fourth. So as deep as the draft may be in these guys, the ones that can help this year may not be around by round four. And that's what the Seahawks have to decide. Do they want to keep that number 18 overall pick, or they want to trade down so they can get the second and third round picks and enjoy the depth in the draft at some of these positions? Because the depth in draft's not going to do them a whole lot of good for 2018 when you're six of their last eight picks are in the rounds 5 and 7.
No doubt. That's where I think that they've got to do a lot of thinking. Where do you think they stand on Key, the pass rushing defensive end out of LSU, who's had a whole bunch of problems off the field?
Well, Pete Carroll has not shied away from those guys, as you know. I mean, Frank Clark was kicked off the Michigan team and spent a little time in an Ohio jail before they drafted him a few years ago. And that's just one case of that. I don't think the Seahawks would just automatically take him off the draft board. They'll do their investigations and talking to people just like they did with Clark. If there's one of the few teams in the league that will take all comers and investigate everyone, it's the Seahawks. So I wouldn't rule out anybody that can rush the passer with whatever background they have as somebody, a candidate for the Seahawks.
Still looks unlikely that there's going to be an Earl Thomas trade.
I think so, John. It just seems they're asking so much, as they should. I mean, ask for the moon. If someone gives it to you, then you make the deal. But they're asking so much. A first-round pick, apparently, of course, a third-round pick that they are trying to recoup. I think maybe even a player on top of that. And if they don't get it, fine. And I think that the most likely scenario remains that they're going to have him begin the season playing under the final year of his contract. And that's going to tick him off. And they will test whether he really is going to hold out, as he suggested he might at the Pro Bowl in January. But the Seahawks right now don't know exactly what the team's going to look like this time next year. They're not sure if they're completely rebuilding on defense or whether for sure Cam Chancellor is going to come back or not. They have a $30 million a year plus question in Russell Wilson's contract this time next year also there. And they can't think about Earl Thomas without thinking about how much they're going to end up paying Russell Wilson. The other thing to consider here, and I mentioned it in the paper a few times, it's not that they're trying to decide what to do with Earl Thomas for 2019. The kind of money they're getting, they're going to end up paying him, even if it's not the top of the league money, the kind of money they're paying, they're going to have it as a 2 or 3 or maybe even 4 year deal, spread out that signing bonus and proration money across the life of the deal so it'll be salary cap friendly. So now you're talking about commitments to 2020 and 21 they don't even know what their team's going to look like by then. Are they going to completely be back to 2010 and 11 with restocking the defense and hoping to find gems in the draft? And is Russell Wilson truly going to be here? Which they certainly intend to re-sign him. But the Earl Thomas question is not for just this year and next year. It's what he and the team are going to look like in 2020 and 21. And do you want to be paying residual money on your salary cap for Earl Thomas when he's 31, 32, 33 years old? They just did it with Cam Chancellor, and 3 months after giving him $15 million guaranteed, of course, he has a career-ending, potentially career-ending, career-threatening neck injury. Those are the considerations they have. It's easy for fans, of course, to say, pay the guy. He's been so great. Pay him. Well, okay, yeah, he has been great, but if you start paying out legacy contract money, you're going to get into the Cam Chancellor situation again. So there are a lot of considerations for where they are going to be in 2020 and 21 when it comes to Earl Thomas's negotiation.
And then finally, thoughts on Jim Trotter's story that the Mark Rogers and the Russell Wilson camp kind of wondering why John Snyder would look at Josh Allen and also look at Sam Darnold quarterbacks. I mean, I thought that was a kind of expected overreaction by Russell Wilson's representatives.
Yeah, when's the real season begin, John, so we can start talking about football? No,
yeah.
It is not news that John Snyder is looking at top quarterback prospects. He does it every draft. That's his job. And he has to give grades to players that are on their draft board, whether they're going to end up drafting them or not. They have to know what the rest of the league is doing. They have to know what these guys look like in person. They can't take somebody else's word for it, so they go fly to Laramie, Wyoming to see Josh Allen or to Oklahoma to see Baker Mayfield. That doesn't mean they're going to draft him. Now, some of what's at play here, of course, is Mark Rogers is a baseball agent, and his one NFL client happens to be an $88 million franchise quarterback one. But he's used to the realm of Major League Baseball, guaranteed contract, multi-year deals, fully guaranteed, and the negotiations that come with that and the circles with that. He is not so versed in the nuances of NFL negotiations and in the world of general managers and scouts. So I think he's doing a little leveraging. He did this when Russell Wilson's rookie contract was ending around 2015, when all of a sudden Wilson started showing up at Texas Rangers training camps for spring training cameos. So it's just the first salvo in what I think is going to be about 12 or 14 months worth of posturing and leveraging. But his feelings should not be hurt, Russell Wilson nor his camp, because the Seahawks are scouting top quarterbacks. They're doing their job. And they do
quarterbacks they have no chance to get.
Exactly.
Greg Bell, thank you so much. Greg Bell from the News Tribune joining us. And enjoy the weekend.
Thanks, John. You too. Get better. You sound ill.
I am ill. Hope I do get better. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Good.
All right, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. We'll wrap it up here. We got Mariner baseball coming up next. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Our thanks to Matt Nelson for running the show, producing the show. Let's go to Dan in Seattle. Hey, Dan.
Hi, John. Good to have you
Hi.
Back. Hope you're continuing to be on the mend.
I'm trying.
I could tell.
I can guarantee within 3 minutes I'm going to be taking a nap.
Good. Awesome. Hey, I'm curious. There's a lot of different trade information out there for the Seahawks draft in the first round that about half the people think they're going to try to take somebody like Josh Jackson and get another first round top right corner to replace Richard Sherman. But then, like Greg was talking about and you were talking about today, that they would go after another pass rusher.
Yeah, I think that's going to be more necessary. Because I'm wondering two things. It's a deep draft for cornerbacks, and they usually don't draft cornerbacks too high. You know, understand, like, I mean, even when they took Shaquille Griffin as the 13th quarterback and in the third round, I mean, that still wasn't high, but it's higher than normal because they can get cornerbacks that fit their system because their system is so good that they can make those moves and do it, not in the first, second round.
Yeah, I get it. So one of the scenarios that I keep hearing also is Buffalo, Pittsburgh, and Carolina would want to move up, even if it's just
four to eight spots, Buffalo, to try to get the quarterback that they want,
right,
that type of thing, and only have to give up their first round and maybe a second or a third round pick to be able to move up that much. Do you think the Seahawks would look at something like that to pick up that extra
no.
pick?
They will not try to get something. They will only not try to move up. They would move down before they would move up. I mean, they don't have the resources because, remember, they don't have a pick in the second and third round, so there's no resources there. They don't have a second-round pick next year. So what can you do to trade up? All that ammunition is gone. So you'd have to think that in the end, what the strategy is going to be is to trade down or stay there and take a player. But if they do that, they're going to be limited in what they can add to the team. Sure, they can trade up from the third round and all that stuff, or the fourth round to get third round picks, but that's going to be very limited. Hey, by the way, again, we want to thank you, Dan, and thank everybody. Mariner baseball is coming up next. Chance to see if Mike Leake can be able to get the losing streak out of the way. That is coming up, and that's going to be one that's going to be interesting game in the cold weather. And, of course, I'll be back on Monday at 10, John Clayton Show, and 710 ESPN Seattle.